to those who have knowledge of genetics and believe that a child's propensities are contained in the chromosomatic structure at the time of his conception, may I say that this may be partially or even wholly true as far as the physical body is concerned. A child may borrow the dark eyes and brown hair of the mother or any of the innumerable configurations of physical traits from either or both parents. Yet he does not borrow his spiritual nature, nor the things which he truly is. However, to you who are parents, may I caution you that the factors of environment with which you surround your child may do either one of two things: they may warp or distort him, or they may add to an often expressed spiritual concept which may have been the motivating cause for your child to come back into this world. So therefore be careful. Each child is a charge which has been given to you by the Creator. Yours is the responsibility of stewardship in a young and formative period of his life. He may be an old soul who has sought you out, thinking that he could find in the outlet or doorway which you have created for him, the true expression and purpose toward which he has developed through countless ages. Try to recognize in him that he, like yourself, is an individual divine expression of God. You may not know, in this lifetime, that your husband or your wife could have been your brother or sister. Neither will you know that your son or daughter may have been mother or father, or that they could have been someone whom you severely wronged, nor should you try to do so. Your lack of clairvoyant faculties would prohibit any factual knowledge, and until you have developed such latent outlets of clairvoyant expression, let us instead pursue a more realistic policy in dealing with the various members of your household and your social structures. Yes, even your friends may have been linked to you with family ties. Let us all, therefore, treat each other as brother and sister. Let us see in each other that we are individual expressions of infinity, and let us all participate in this universal brotherhood and express our fullest measure of love. So rest in peace. Malvar Chapter 25. It was quite obvious that the two preceding chapters, inasmuch as they contained most of the relative values of man's physical and material expressions on his earth plane, could not be given in their entirety in two transmissions. So if you will have the patience to bear with me, so that I may point up and objectify the salient points, future generations of mankind will be able to find a much more peaceful and productive way of life. I have pointed out that while many governments were primarily instituted and conceived with righteous spiritual concepts, such concepts will go astray unless they are properly activated with the correct fundamental understanding of man's spiritual nature. Such is the case with your constitution, and the idealisms which were interjected into its construction. However, it is a mistake to believe that any man, or group of individuals, can properly execute and transmit such idealism into your way of life unless properly ordained for this purpose. There is in your government, as in many others, a distinct schism or cleavage between the spiritual expression and the way in which the government is expressed. The direction of any nation, and the expression of the people thereof, should always be so constituted as to be the function of what you might call a priesthood. Several other ancient civilizations, as Atlantis, Lemuria, Egypt, and many others, have, at different periods, existed under such a governmental function as was expressed in the divine spiritual concepts of the priesthood of the temple. I realize, however, that your present day would express innumerable spiritual concepts in a likewise uncounted number of temples. These are all good and a necessary spiritual function in their own relative positions. Or should I say they are much better than nothing? Yet none of the spiritual concepts which exist on your Earth planet today are sufficient unto themselves to serve in a direct capacity as a spiritual government of the people. Thus it is that you have come to great strife among your nations, for you do not properly understand your relationship with your brothers and sisters about your world. Such a peaceful utopia as you have pictured for yourselves cannot and will not be resolved from such wide esprit differences of concept. In a future millennium, as it is called in your Bible, man will eventually unite himself into a spiritual brotherhood. He will find that all peoples and nations will function quite properly under a spiritual leadership which is motivated by the infinite principles of brotherly love. Such a government will be directed and expressed to the people from a temple in which certain individuals will appear on your earth plane, and these individuals shall be, as you call them, avatars or masters. Today each man and woman in your great nation, and so likewise in many other nations, are all sending forth a united and concerted prayer, or a plea, to the inner consciousness for a solution. And so God will thus send you one. It shall not come suddenly or with fanfare and trumpets, but only gradually as it can be assimilated and woven into the structures of everyday life. I also pointed out some factors in your sex relationship with your fellow men or women. There is at the present time a tremendous load of guilt among your people which stems from the ignorant and unrealistic attitudes towards sex relationships. It is also a seeming paradox that while man tries to live a moral and somewhat spiritual life and build within his consciousness something of a balance in his nature and purpose in your world, yet as I have said before, such spiritual motivation often goes astray if without a knowledge of the active working principles and their proper application. In your world, sex has become a malicious and openly perverted concept. There is a tremendous exploitation of sex in almost every walk of life. The signboards and shops of your communities are crowded with displays of the almost uncovered female form, the full impact of the autosuggestive usage of which is intended to attract the eye of the passing male. Such a practice is licentious and demoralizing. Likewise are all the fields of the entertainment world cluttered up with these autosuggestive sex malpractice. It is a common sight in many of your large cities to see a church alongside of a rooming house which is devoted to sex perversion. If I can quote one of your earth adages, you are neither fish nor fowl. While you cry for spirituality and a release from your fears and frustrations, yet you foster and nourish practices which are open violations of such a nature that they would obstruct any spiritual help which might be poured into your earth life. We here in the spiritual realms would like a little more cooperation. Be sincere when you pray to God, and do not defeat the purpose of your prayers by indulging yourself in the negative materialistic perversions of which your world is full. This problem of sex and moral issues, which are so closely related in your everyday life, will also be solved in a gradual manner in a future day when you begin to recognize more fully the latent unexpressed clairvoyant qualities which are a part of every individual's concept. You will also begin to develop a new science of therapy which will more fully utilize these clairvoyant gifts of more highly advanced souls. You will also be able to institutionalize within your hospitals and clinics certain vital spiritual elements which you call faith healing or spiritual healing, by consciously recognizing and fostering such an attitude, which will bring into existence proper training and specialization of clairvoyance and spiritual healing. You will thus find a tremendous relief and a factual cure from the pressures of ignorance and superstition which have bred these so-called incurable diseases into your way of life. Such training and specialization, however, will also be a part of that future day, and will be a functional part of that great temple which will not only guide the political destinies of man, but shall also direct his spiritual concepts. For only in the spiritual concepts will you find the true evaluation and solution for all the ills, political, physical or otherwise, which have been so incurred, from a proper concept of spiritual wisdom. It is my purpose in the creation of this book that these many factors shall be objectively pointed out to you. And thus may it be, that what is given here today shall become part of the spiritual structures for that future age, your millennium, your Aquarius, your Utopia. Malva. Chapter 26. Greetings, dear ones, and may I say first that something like congratulations are in order, as I can see that you are now viewing us in our proper relationship, and as a consequence you will be taken to the altar room where you will witness the emergence, or as you call it, birth of a person into our higher order. She is a woman whom we shall, for convenience sake, call Order. She comes from one of the lower orders here on Venus and she has been here and studied while in a clairvoyant state, yet today she will actually be given a body such as ours so that she may resume her life here among us. Now let us cross over through the central pavilion of the temple and further down the hall we shall enter the altar room. As you can see, it is not a very large room, but it has some differences which are worth mentioning. At the far end there is a raised platform which seems to be surrounded in a semicircle by a series of crystal-like mirrors. These are about 7 feet high, in your Earth measurement, and resemble something like a multi-section screen such as may be found in an Earth home. Their function is to help concentrate the mind energies which will be projected by those who actively participate. Overhead in the ceiling you will notice that there are three large discs of crystal which are shaped somewhat like curved lenses. One is a deep blue, another is red like a ruby, and the third is a golden yellow. They are so focused that they will project a multicolored beam or matrix of energy into the area just in front of the reflecting crystal mirrors. There are also, out in front about 20 feet away, a semicircle of 7 low-raised footstools, which are used to kneel on. Throughout the room there is a beautiful intense radiation. The floor is also covered with something which could be called a carpet, but is actually a soft thick sheet of radiant energy, something like the more familiar ectoplasm, except that it, too, is a bright golden color. In the rear of this room are a number of benches which are sometimes partially filled by those who are closely associated with those who participate in this emergence. As there is some time yet before the ceremony takes place, let us sit quietly on one of these benches, while I explain to you something more of the principles of concept and why it is possible that you are now seeing us for the first time in a true relationship. The words concept and perception, in general, may mean somewhat the same. Concept is associated in an overall sense with the eye and mind, whereas percept is usually associated with the more physical relationships. In some of our previous transmissions there were several statements which I made which are apparent to be a bit confusing. I stated that as you first saw us here we would appear somewhat as you yourself appeared to others in your physical world. Later on you again saw us where we appeared to be like large glowing masses of light. If a group of people saw a thief fleeing down the street, they would later on all give a somewhat different description of the fleeing man. The principal reason for this should be more fully understood, as in understanding this principle, you will understand why the earth plane people are constantly deluding themselves. The mechanics of seeing on your physical plane are something like this. Your eye focuses through the lens the various light frequencies which are reflected by tiny light-sensitive cells mounted on the apexes of tiny rods and cones which covered the screen or retina at the rear of the eyeball. The light frequency impulses are received into the brain at the rate of about 20 per second. Your brain must then sort them in proper order with other memory impressions so that they are properly placed or conceived and related to all of your past experiences of reception. In most people the amount of synchronization varies considerably. In other words, if the eye sends faster than the brain can receive and classify, an incomplete picture is formed. Later on the mind will attempt to fill in such eye-gazing portions of the picture. This it does by taking some portions of other pictures which were received at a different time, thus the person will vary in his description of a scene or episode from the description of the man standing next to him. Here on Venus our perception and conception is exactly reversed, in general sense from that of your Earth people. There, as you cannot see spirit, the physical world is the most predominant, so that you view all things physically. Here we view things exactly opposite. We see all things in a spiritual world and in a spiritual way. We can, of course, just as you do, but in an advanced way, see into your physical world. You can clairvoyantly see into our spiritual world. That is why when you first saw us here you would have of course, quite likely been able to see us partially in our, shall I say, physical bodies, and your mind would automatically fill in that which you could not see. Such a view process would happen in a similar way to any other form of man who did not have our physical appearance. Therefore he would see us physically as related to himself. You must bear in mind that what you call our physical form is an advanced spiritual form, while it does assume a shape and form which, as you now see, is quite like your own. If you remember when you first saw Ut, that he appeared as a golden man. As you see us now, we are somewhat like that except that we are very radiant. We seem to be projecting from within many radiant shafts of light of brilliant intensity and many colors. Completely around us is a broad frequency band of many colors. This is the aura and is much more intense and radiant than your own. In a general, physical way we are about 6 or 7 feet tall. We do not weigh because we are not affected by the gravitational field. Looking at my face closely, you see I have a high forehead and my hair comes to my shoulders. I have two well-shaped ears, my nose is straight. I have a well-formed chin and my eyes are very large and seem to shine or glow. Over my body I seem to be wearing, as near as you can tell, a shimmering translucent tunic. In fact, my face, as I do not have a beard, seems to look like several of the earth pictures which have been drawn to resemble masters. These descriptions, as I have given them to you, and as you see them, are as near as they can be put into earth language. However, remember when you come over here, in some future spiritual evolution, we may, at that time, appear somewhat different. I might mention that several earth plane people, such as I have described previously, saw us and the higher masters as intense white masses of fire. So, as I said before, concept is a matter of relativity in the position you occupy in your evolution. But now it is time for the ceremony. The benches around us have been filled as we talked, with my fellow Venusians. I will not attempt to call them to you by name, as we actually have no name here. Names are something which help to classify personality traits. Now there are seven people coming into the room in single file, being led by one of our very advanced Venusians, Shattok. Now they are taking their positions and kneeling on the small stools on the floor. There are three of the feminine gender on the left side and three masculine on the right, with the leader in the center. Now you will hear some kind of a strange music which seems to come from nowhere. The people in the semicircle have their gazes intently focused on the area just in front of the mirrors. The music now seems to be growing more intense. It would be difficult to describe these sounds, as they are actually made by energy which is being concentrated into intense beams by the minds of these seven persons. It is something like a peculiar whistling, singing or rustling. Now you seem to see a shaft of radiant light building up in front of the mirrors. This light seems to be filled with tiny brilliant stars which are moving about and blinking in a very rapid fashion. Now gradually this radiant shaft begins to expand and grow larger. There is also an appearance of solidity which is becoming increasingly more dense. Now you are seeing a vague outline of a human form, slowly forming just as an artist might be sketching it on paper. The features of the face begin to form in their proper places. The arms and hands and fingers are also appearing. Now she is almost here. As you see, she is a very beautiful woman, and when I say beautiful, it is a spiritual beauty which surpasses any physical beauty which you may have seen. Her features are fine and well formed. Her eyes are very large, lustrous, glowing pools of light. Her hair is a tumbled mass of waves cascading over her shoulders. Her arms are slender, her fingers long and tapering. Just as we, she is clothed in a shimmering veil of light. But now the process of emergence is complete. The kneeling people stand up. The music has ceased. Audra steps down and is welcomed with loving embraces into the arms of her new parents, and her brothers and sisters. I, too, am overcome with emotion. So for now, in the excitement of welcoming our new sister, may I say, until some future time, rest in peace. Malva, Chapter 27. A few hours ago you witnessed an emergence or birth of a dear sister into our plane of life. Now that she is securely placed within the arms of her loved ones, let us return to the street where you first entered, so that we may walk toward the central temple which you first saw, although not too clearly, at the time of entering. As we pass down the street, you will notice now that you can see that my fellow brothers and sisters are coming and going, somewhat in the fashion of earth people. In this city there are no displays of merchandise or any other particular sights which might be seen in your earth cities. As was first described, there is a, shall I say, heavenly radiance and beauty which seems to come from out of nowhere. While the sun may appear or disappear overhead, yet there is no distinct separation of night or day, as our ability of perception does not depend on the common reflection principles associated with the physical senses. In other words, the absence of the sun makes no difference as far as our ability to see and carry on our way of life is concerned. Nor are we influenced by the regular cycles of physical depression and tiredness which induce a sleep state. On either side of this wide street are the occasional and widely separated doorways of the different dwellings, which are, as you have seen, all made of a beautiful crystalline substance. Even the paving which you walk upon is such a crystal. However, let us look at the temple which is now very close before us. As you thought previously, it does, in some respects, remind you of the earthly Taj Mahal. The basic structure, all of which is glowing white crystal, begins with a circular building of white crystal columns, each about 20 feet apart, as the building is about 500 feet in circumference. There are quite a large number of these crystal columns. The roof is a butterfly-shaped dome, similar to the shapes which are pictured as Arabian mosques. At the four different places where a street ends or points toward this temple is a small circular tower which rises to a great height, and ends in a similar dome-shaped structure. The walls and ceilings are, of course, all constructed of the white glowing crystal. Around the outside in a circular fashion is a large area which is devoted to the culture of beautiful plants and shrubbery with pleasant walks just as in your earth parks. In front of each of the four towers is a beautiful lake, the waters of which are the purest liquid crystal. Upon the surface of these lakes are many beautiful glowing water lilies, lotuses and other aquatic plants. Around and about the shore and floating on the surface are a number of beautiful highly resplendent waterfowl. Several of these remind you of your more familiar flamingos and swans which you have seen in your parks and zoos. Here is a convenient bench, so let us sit a while and enjoy the amazing beauty and splendor which you see about you, and while you are thus occupied I will go a little further into some of the numerous facets of your earth life evolutions. I might say before this, however, that there will be here in this temple, a ceremony in which one of our loved ones will leave our Venusian way of life to ascend closer to his ultimate mastership. If you remember the tall brother who stood in the center of the semicircle at the birth of Uddha, he is the one who is about to so ascend. But we do not measure our lives here by the matter of time as you know it on earth. Rather, our lives here are measured as cycles. In fact, when you begin to understand in a more abstract manner, you will see that the infinite mind of God is always expressing himself, both finite and infinite, in the manner of cycles or evolutions, and this is true, whether it is man or beast, fish or fowl, insect or plant. It is a constant succession of an infinite number of cycles. Energy or intelligence always stems away in a cycle or circular path from the fountainhead. So it must return and then it will begin again, yea, even unto eternity and beyond. I will more fully explain this, inasmuch as an explanation will clear up some of the mystery which is associated with the coming and going of the plant and animal life on your earth. You must know that as a cycle is a circle, so within the cycle itself are many smaller cycles linked to each other through a certain law of frequency relationship. In your earth life you have found that it is a world of extreme and sharp contrasts. This is because God in his infinite wisdom has so conceived and contrived that you must always, through the power of concept, constantly add to, in a constructive way, all of the infinite things which God is. Thus you will return to the fountainhead where you will again resume another group of dimensions and worlds, and so this process is repeated and repeated. That is why in understanding these things, I am humbly observant of my position in God's creative mind. I have tried humbly, and without personal feelings, to picture to you some of the similarities in your earth life which still link you with some of the lower orders of concept. In your community lives, in your dependence upon each other, I have said that it looks like you are all huddled together for security. In your daily lives, sleep, work and sleep, are interspersed by periods of feeding and caring for your physical bodies. Your cycles and periods of life appear to us, as I have said, like that of a squirrel, which is caged in a circular enclosure, and running around just as you do, in repeating the various cycles of your lives. I do not mean to imply that you are animals, because I understand fully your position in God's creation. Rather, I point out these things to you as a means whereby you can begin to further your evolution. As we are close to the subject of the animal kingdom, let us go a little farther into this subject. You may have wondered, as I have said, at the strange appearance of familiarity of the plant and bird life, as seen in some of the species about you. The Earthman has not learned to the fullest extent that all such things have their own position in the plan of evolution. And when I say evolution, I do not mean the principles which were exploited by a man named Darwin. I am referring to a more advanced spiritual concept. You may have wondered, does an animal or a tree possess a soul? Yes, indeed, they do. They possess souls, but not in the sense of your generally conceived idea of a soul. In the case of man, soul merely means that he is linked up as an individual to the fountainhead. A tree or an animal or any other living, crawling, flying thing on your earth, as in any other material world, is also linked up to the fountainhead. However, in an entirely different relationship. It is God's expression of the finite and the infinite. Because an animal dies or a tree is burned or chopped down, it does not mean they cease to exist. They existed before they materialize into your world as idea, form and structure of the infinite mind. Because a forest burns does not mean that the trees have disappeared. Likewise in all other things, as God creates all things, creation began, but there is no beginning of time, for the creation began in God's mind, and as it was conceived so does he manifest. The disappearance of material or physical forms from your earth does not mean that God has let himself be destroyed. As such physical and material expressions exist in your world, so they must likewise exist in a suitable form in an infinite number of worlds and dimensions. The forest of your world of today may grow as the forest upon another planet in another day. We can assume that each regrowth or reappearance of God, in this form, is also attended by and reflects a higher state of evolution. While this is a highly abstract evaluation, I would like you in the coming days to give it much thought. It will explain to you how plant and bird life can appear in a much more highly developed form of energy in our city. It will also explain what happens to your dear little pets. As you all are, and will ultimately be, the sum and total of God's most divine expression, so will you find, in your future worlds and in the high astral realms, that your pets have followed you there. They may not be the little flea-bitten dog that was so troubled with distemper, but instead a much more highly evolved image or picture, if I can call it such, of that particular dog. Of course he will be just as real as he was to you on earth, but in God's great understanding, as it is expressed in the law of attraction, if you love your doggy strong enough and he loves you likewise, so shall it be in the future. Each animal, each plant or tree, starts in its cycle from the cosmic fountainhead. And in this cycle of coming and going, it is always the same species as its original creation. It only changes in its frequency relationships, in the various planes or dimensions, or can I say worlds, in which it finds itself. Always remember, however, as I have said, you are the most ultimate and most infinite of all God's creations, and one in which he expresses his fullest measure. Do not misconstrue me, brother, nor the things which may seem to you a bit harsh. Your thought patterns are very adhesive and sometimes a great deal of expression is needed to loosen them. Each and every one of you on your earth plane is a brother and sister to us, and our expression of love to you is far greater than any measure of love which you have yet conceived. So wherever it is in your many evolutions that you wish a helping hand, your Venusian brothers will do their utmost. With our love, may you rest in peace. Malva, Chapter 28. Again we come to you with our love from Venus. Yes, it is quite true. Our sister, Ruth, has discovered in her own way through her vision, that we are Shamba, or should we more correctly say, part of Shamba. We herein as you are one of seven such cities and places. Each one of these cities is directly related to your earth plane in a certain separated type of spiritual service. We, in Azure, function with those who have passed on from the fleshy in some form of maladjustment, such as the soldier boys and sailors, the suicides and murderers, and their victims. The other cities relate their activities to equally well-defined fields of spiritual and physical therapies. It is my plan to go into these different cities and, just as we have done here in Azure, make an exploration and find out more fully their own particular capacity. You must remember these seven cities are all on the same relative plane of spiritual concept and are not to be confused with our brothers in the lower orders of Venus. Sufficient at this time, however, of this particular subject. While this transmission is worthy of everyone's attention, it is directed particularly to all Earth doctors and their allied and associated sciences. You have in the past 100 years made many noteworthy and commendable advances in the field of medical science, as it is related to mankind. However, there is still much to be done.